podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it's the Weekender. It's John Givens hosting this week, and I'm very excited because we are back in the studio. We are in the studio today, and I'm joined by Andy Heaton, by Sean Bennett, and by Craig Hannon to talk about the last week in and around Liverpool, and it'll be very Liverpool-focused. On and off the pitch, it's been an interesting week. Parts 2, 3 and 4 are all going to be focused around the test events that went on last weekend in Liverpool. So I'm delighted to be joining people from Culture Liverpool, from Public Health, and also DJs who performed at the events. And obviously, a couple of people in the room as well. But I say obviously, a couple of people in the room were at those events as well. So I'm going to get them to give a little bit of feedback from their point of view at the start when we come back in. But before all that, last weekend, as I say, was very eventful. And there was a game against Manchester United that normally we'll be reflecting on still, but we can't because it didn't happen. And so instead, we'll reflect on what it all means from a Liverpool point of view. And I was looking around at things people were saying about what we did and how we covered last weekend, and I found this post on Rourke, which I thought was quite interesting, and I don't know the post's name, so apologies, I didn't make a note of that. Lots of people talking about the coverage that we did, and obviously being very Manchester focused, and this post said, "It's fair enough and totally understandable that Tor's attention has mostly been on the protest and its purpose. It's part of a bigger picture after all. But now I'd like to hear about what it means to the sporting side. It looks like we're going to be pushed into a reschedule that frankly disadvantages us and helps United, and there's no chance that this would be a fair outcome. Now that the smoke of the protest is clearing somewhat, I think it's worth discussing." That was thrown on before it was rescheduled. This is scheduled for the Thursday. So Manchester United play Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday that week, and obviously the Sunday before. Liverpool have got a little bit of a gap. So I don't necessarily want to talk about the idea of it helping Man United and disadvantaging us, but it is interesting. And I'll start with you, Craig, point of view, to reflect maybe a little bit on the players and manager, and they've been through a lot over the last couple of weeks, and how it might have sort of affected them really, and how it might affect them from a footballing point of view, because we had nice little gaps between the games, and now, you know, there's nothing for a while, and then we go Sunday, Thursday, Sunday. And also from a point of view of just them really, and what they must have made of it all, because, you know, they've gone from full stadiums and winning every week and feeling like we're all one, and unity is strength banners, and to a world that's made everyone a bit more isolated, a kind of a situation where, you know, they must have a bit of maybe, you know, worry about the bond between them and the fans anymore. They're seeing people protesting, they're seeing people, you know, getting games called off, albeit not their fans, but for things that their club have sort of done as well. I mean, this is a very long way of saying it must be a very strange time to play for anyone at the moment, but especially one of those top six, and we're here to talk about Liverpool, so we'll talk about them.
Yeah, I agree, and I think something that I've been thinking of recently is just how often when it's come to a football match, or the football match has been due to take part that day and then doesn't, sort of how much my head hasn't been in the actual fixture itself. So in previous years, when you're about to play Liverpool, Man United, and it's Old Trafford, you're thinking about past times Old Trafford, you're thinking of Danny Murphy, you're thinking of the 4-1, the one in 2013. You know, you're thinking about last season and Adam Lallana scoring late, and you're thinking about what the game will mean on that day and how big a rivalry it is. And yeah, I think this time we've just felt a little bit removed. It's felt a little bit sort of like it's in the background of something that's much bigger happening, not just with the protests, I mean with everything that's going on around the ESL, everything that's going on in the wider context of the world at the minute. And I think that's something that a lot of football fans have struggled with throughout this season, and especially at a time now where it's come to a point where maybe we're not entirely sure that Liverpool have anything to play for anymore in terms of whether we can get top four. It just all feels very strange for us. So if you're the footballer and, you know, you're the professional and you've, you know, you're working day in, day out, preparing for this game, and then it doesn't happen and suddenly everything's up in the air, you know, that can be very difficult. And you know, I even in the simplest sense have been thinking about this season and how it must have been for new signings coming to Liverpool, yeah, coming to the city, trying to sort of feel part of the team but also feel part of the new city that they belong to, learning the language and so on. There's just so many things that we don't think about in terms of these footballers as humans and what they've had to come up against. And you know, football feels like a very strange thing to talk about at the moment, and it feels as if you don't know what's going to happen next, doesn't it? It just feels as if we're at this point where we're amidst chaos. It's storming at the minute, and you don't know when things are going to sort of level out and become more normal. So it must be massively difficult for them.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, Sean, because the bond between the players and supporters that felt a couple of years ago like it had never been so strong, you know, certainly in my lifetime, you know, now kind of feels a little bit broken or a little bit at least distant. And obviously the other thing that happened last weekend was the social media blackouts, and that was a result of abuse that footballers were receiving online, mainly around sort of discrimination and, you know, race and gender and things like that. And so there's all that going on in footballers' minds where they're not necessarily feeling the love in the ground, but when they are going online, they're seeing, you know, not all negativity, but certainly enough for it to get to them. And then within the context of all that, you've got a team who are then staying in a hotel and can't get to the ground because the supporters, you know, they're being told it's not safe for them to do so. It must be getting to them a little bit.
It must be. And I think it's almost like it's not even just this incident that's probably affected them. If you just think of the cumulative effect of everything, you know, obviously COVID happening has affected everyone. And then you've got the condensed season, the injuries, the mess with VAR, the rules changing mid-season. When's that ever happened before? then the Super League, then the protest. And it's just like, it's almost like, I know me personally, I'm just like, oh, is that just another thing? Now it's like, it doesn't even feel that dramatic when these things happen. But I think the one thing that probably does help is I noticed that Klopp's attitude when all of this was happening. You know, obviously the Super League was awful, but, you know, everything was quite hysterical on Twitter. And then his first interview, he was like, just calm down. He was like, I know these owners, like, they're all right. I'll deal with it. Like, I'd rather deal with people I know. And I think, I imagine he's pretty much like that in the background with everyone else as well. As in, like, it all does feel quite dramatic when you think of it as this kind of, everything on top of each other. But I think he'll just be in the background saying, you know, just focus on football. And it's hard, isn't it? Because I've always found that, like, you know, life got pretty complicated, didn't it, around like March time, and then footy was the escape, wasn't it? Yes. And then suddenly footy got dead complicated, and then at one point I was like, oh, I just want to forget about footy and crack on with life. give me a bit of that.
And big arms are open.
Yeah. And now I'm thinking, God, like, now that the kind of politics and everything around footy's got dead complicated, I'm like, just get me back to like a mundane game of footy where Liverpool are losing six games on the bounce and that was our biggest worry. Like, it's just changing every week, isn't it? And I think you just kind of, you want this element of escapism, and it'll be the same for the players. Like, getting on a pitch is just what they want to do. And I think if the game went on, you know, they probably would have just got their heads down and cracked on. But it's now, you know, they probably have to deal with the media questions around it and all of that type of stuff, which probably doesn't help. But I think the fact I've got Jurgen Klopp there, who seems to have the calmest head in any situation, is probably the best thing the club's got as well. Even, you know, there's so much going on with the fan reaction to many things, but I think the fact that Klopp's come out and said, listen, I know these people, I'd rather deal with them than someone else, I think that's calmed a lot. It's definitely calmed me down and thought, okay, let's just try and us have a bit of stability while there's so much chaos going on everywhere else. Like, we can all, you know, just get behind the team is the very least. And he was fuming, wasn't he, that like anyone was even, like, when the Leeds fans were shouting at them, he was fuming that like anything could even affect them players. And I'm sure there's other things he's not happy with, but he never lets it affect the team, and that's his kind of number one priority every time, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's his job now, isn't it, Andy, to sort of protect the bubble, if you like, and footballers, you know, live in a bubble, and we've been critical of that, but at the moment it's probably sort of no bad thing if they can keep in that, really, and keep focused on what they need to do, because there's a lot of noise outside.
Yeah, it's I think that what the events of the last week will have certainly sharpened the mind amongst them as well. But I nearly said Melwood then as well.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it?
It is. It is difficult.
I was doing a Southampton fan before and nearly called it the Dell, which would have been good.
Dad.
I know, exactly. Yeah.
They'd be partying on the streets of Main Road last night. No, but you'd only get little glimpses of what's going on. But the pictures of Melwood, no one seems particularly downtrodden. Everyone seems, you know, relatively happy, all right, albeit not smiling and laughing, but it's been difficult. I take Craig's point before about, you know, he can't get his head in the game, but I think that's maybe possibly a symptom of where we are as a team. And we would our heads be in it if we were top of the league? Would our heads be in it if, you know, we just got to a Champions League final. And it is difficult and it is distant. And, you know, if anyone's good at keeping them together, it will be Jürgen. And, you know, suppose what I'm trying to say is there's twofold here. It's clear they trust each other because they've got to, because what else can you do?
Mm.
But on the same note, you can use a little bit of kidology for searching for silver linings. This is the biggest silver lining reach I'm going to go for.
I'm into it.
I need it.
No. So if you're, from a psychology point of view, you know, as an absolutely no, someone who's got no qualifications in psychology whatsoever, but just in layman's terms, if you're trying to visualise something and you're saying to the lads, look, just get through this. We all know what this is. It's because the crowd aren't there. And you talk about building that bond up with the supporters and the strength of the bond between them. And it was magnificent. And John's exactly right. When we were in the stadium. Now, the problems with this season and the slump may be far deeper and far more, you know, there might be technical issues, fitness, we've had the injury situation. But a lot of football psychological. And if you can hang your hat on with that squad saying, look, just get to the end of the season. If we qualify for the top four, brilliant. And then imagine how good next season is going to be when everyone's back. And that's assuming that everyone is.
But that's also assuming that the relationship is still the same. And I guess that's what I'm getting at is I think throughout the season, they could have said, you know, to the players, oh, when we get all back together, it'll all be fine. But then when they're looking at, you know, Manchester United fans, you know, you can't, if they literally can't get to a stadium, and yeah, it's all the supporters, but it's still all around this ESL thing. You know, as I say, they're having to come off social media because of the sort of abuse that they're all getting. And again, these aren't just Liverpool things, but I'm just wondering whether they're as confident now that the bond between them and the fans is as close as what it was before.
So I think I can hypothesise that Liverpool will be all right. And I'll tell you for why. What we've seen, in my opinion, is that we've been able to separate the ownership group from the team on the pitch. I think that's been the general mood around Liverpool anyway.
Yeah, I think we'll be all right. I'm just not sure if the players know that.
So, but this is what I'm leading to. I think one of the players who's come out of this and shown himself with distinction over the past, well, couple of years, but especially this year, is Jordan Henderson. And I don't think there's anyone I'd want rather round, maybe James Milner as well, round Melwood to try and carry that on. I mean, we know they've got a no dickheads policy anyway. But I just think those two behind them with the experience they've got, and you've got the manager as well. And look, we know this season's been piss poor, but if I want to pick three people to rally the troops and get them in there and go, nah, we keep this together. And by God, if we're back in next season, come that first 5 minutes, well, not even the first five, the half an hour leading up to the first kickoff of the season, they'll know. And I think that's all it'll take. I think all it'll take is the first game at Anfield, a massive welcome and a big win, and I think everything's going to be all right. But I do think the important point in this, John, and I'm sorry for waffling on, is...
No, I've come back to you twice.
Is the distinction between the ownership group and the club, and I think what Liverpool have done especially well is separating those two things.
Yeah, I think that's something that Klopp in every single interview has made sure to do, differentiate the on the pitch, the off the pitch. And I think that's massive in terms of that'll be Jurgen Klopp's messaging. But like, I think we have opportunities before the end of this season to show that, and that there's going to be 10,000 fans in at Anfield, and they'll be able to show their support. The Spine Cop lads have been putting the flags, and they've been putting new flags. So, you know, the team will be turning up to Anfield each time and looking out at the flags and noticing a new one and seeing that, you know, it's not just this thing that happened at the beginning of the season, it's been there all year. They've been doing this sort of with each home game. And then, you know, you're talking about the first home game back in August, but I'm even thinking of the friendlies that they do, because I think the friendlies, if there's going to be fans in the ground, these friendlies will become test events, and suddenly they're going to these games that usually in the past would have been a bit, obviously meaningless, but just, you know, a bit of a kick around and a bit of match fitness, and suddenly they're turning up and there's fans there and there's young kids shouting their name. And
me and you have been out since 11 in the morning.
Yeah, I said young kids shouting their name, me and Gibbo shouting, Trent!
This is what I'm saying about the kidology of it, and it's obviously far deeper and more technical than that, but imagine you're a player, you're a Liverpool player, and all right, towards the end of the season, but let's just say start next season, they win well in the first two home games of the season with the crowd then. And how much better just suddenly.
And suddenly there's momentum again, exactly. and suddenly we're talking about yeah. Anfield's atmosphere, and suddenly we're talking about, like, you know, this electric football team that have sort of been jolted into life by these football fans again.
This is the point I'm trying to ham-fistedly trying to make. It'd be very easy from a ham-fisted psychology point of view to go, yeah, we know we've been poor and things haven't worked out, and we've missed those fellas. So suddenly you've got Virgil van Dijk coming back, you've got Joe Gomez coming back, and you've got the crowd back in. I just think that if you can just use that to power them, I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, I almost like kickstart them, because I think that, you know, all of these problems haven't arisen because of fans not being in. And obviously there's been injuries and so on. You have to caveat everything. But, you know, there's been, you know, Manny's had a poor season, for instance. But I think that, you know, in that first game, if we're all back in and we're singing the Sadio Mane song and he's hearing that again and maybe he gets one, and then suddenly he's found a bit of momentum from somewhere, and then it's building on that in the next game. And you could just see Liverpool sort of like rise up from all of the bullshit of the last 12 months, couldn't you? And I think that, you know, 12 months ago we were talking about this being the best Liverpool side we've ever seen, and that hasn't changed. The footballers haven't changed. It's, you know, it is a lot of its psychology, and a lot of it's what they've, you know, a lot of the adversity that's been thrown at them, and just adversity that the world's had thrown at it. But you know, I'm not worrying about that, and I think that'll be massive. That in terms of the connection that you're talking about, I think just the pre-season will be the beginning of that. There'll be an explosion, and then, you know, Neil said it a few times where, you know, it'll be someone's first Liverpool game every single game of next season and the next season after that.
But we've got,
you know,
the players there as well who've never played in front of the Anfield crowd, like Thiago,
exactly, yeah,
Jota, the songs we've not been able to sing yet. You know what I mean? Like, that'll just give them such a boost.
Wait till Quebec sees our Cossack dance. You know, I mean, I've been working on it. My wife's worried for my knees. She's like, "You're too old for that. Stop it." And she's right, to be fair.
I want to make referees shit themselves again. That's what I'm all
well,
for.
Well, yeah, maybe we'll have to get to Stockley Park, won't we?
That's, you know, the thing about all of this that we've said throughout this season has just been such a shame that there hasn't been a full stadium to be able to thank them, to be able to sing Champions and so on. But, you know, we'll be able to show in our own way, whether it is the first game of season, meeting the team bus in the way that we used to, you know, or maybe it's something. There'll be something that the flag lads will sort inside the ground. And just the very fact that we're all in there screaming their names sort of 30 minutes before kickoff, I think that'll be huge for them when they're warming up, that they realise, fucking hell, here we go again. Do you know what I mean?
And once Neil's on the board as well, he'll start. he's going to be fuming about that. No one tell him. Tweet him. Say, I've heard you're on the... Tweet him. Listeners. Say, I've heard you're going on the board. It was in the weekend.
Oh mate, I've seen so many people tweet us being like, Neil would be good on it, and I'm thinking it'd be the last thing on earth Neil would do.
No,
I
absolutely
reckon.
No chance.
Anfield wrap disclaimer: the previous 30 seconds.
Nah, everyone knows I'm joking.
Nah, but you say that.
No, there's no way. No, we are joking. I promise you.
Changing the subject, Sean. Do you think the fact that two English teams have qualified for the Champions League final will be in the heads a bit? I mean, it could be in the heads of something that spurs them on, or it could be something in the heads as they go, oh, that's another thing that's sort of annoying them at the moment. You know, they'd have wanted to play Sunday, they didn't, and then suddenly they're seeing City go through to a Champions League final, and also Chelsea beat a team that I have heard they think they should have beaten in terms of how good they didn't think Real Madrid were. Do you think that'll be something that'll bring them down, or do you think it'll be no, that's us next year?
I think they'll try not to, but it's really hard not to. I think everyone watching them semi-finals, especially that Real Madrid one, given how we played against them, was a bit of a sickener, wasn't it? And I think there was a point in the season, wasn't there, when obviously the injuries and no fans, we were like, get fans like back, get Gomez back, all the others, get the fans back in, we'll be fine. And it's like, it's just chipped away a little bit at that, like, you know, with all the other stuff happening and then results going not quite our way. So it's, my question is, yeah, can we just, you know, we probably are going to be in the Europa League now, aren't we, but can we come back and just go for the league? Or are we in a transition period, which I really don't want to say, but, you know, Chelsea are definitely on the up. Like, what Tuchel's done in not even a full season is, like, also don't forget they're in the FA Cup final, like, yeah, that is a really good way to end the season. So yeah, I think it's that just makes it that little bit harder to reset, because you could just come in and, you know, come back next season, focus on our game. But it's like, it's not just let's go for City again. I really do believe it's City and Chelsea now, if not more. Let's see what Spurs maybe do with a new manager and stuff, but yeah, I don't know, you know, might be a big summer for some people. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's just tough to take, isn't it? And I think with it being in Istanbul as well, it's just quite annoying, isn't it? Like, seeing
rude,
them. Like,
I think.
It's ours, that one, isn't it?
How many dare they? I know. But the only thing I'm taking a bit of comfort from is that And I would definitely be feeling this way if it was Liverpool in the final. Like, it's definitely not been a normal season. And I don't think I don't think everyone's had a level playing field in the sense of, you know, with the condensed season and the injuries and stuff. And it's no surprise that the two teams who were in the final have probably had some of the least injuries. I know Chelsea were definitely up there at the top of the table with some of the least injuries this season. So, yeah, I'm just thinking they've got, like, I can't remember anything that's happened in the Champions League this year. Like, I don't feel like they've got that road to the final that we romanticise about and we go on about. And then also, you know, they're going to be trying to be piggybacking off all, you know, the social media about the Champions League final. But it's like,
they're not going to have 80,000 in Shevchenko Park.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what are the memories that you cling on to? Do you know what I mean? But then also a few weeks later, your same social media team are saying you've just left that competition. So it just feels a bit, you know, it's not the same. And I'm not just saying that because we're not there. I definitely would feel that.
I'm into it. Yeah, didn't fancy it anyway. That's I think...
busy that day.
I hope they all watch the Champions League final. I hope they watch if it's City that lift it or Chelsea or whatever. I hope they're all sat watching it. Same with when City do the trophy lift or whatever, because, like, that should spur them on. Like, they can remember last year and they can remember the year before and go, that was fun, wasn't it? Let's do that again. And I think that, you know, they have so much to prove now, coming into this season, and that, yeah, they won the big thing in 2019, and they won the thing that we've always longed for. But I still think there's a lot to prove there, and that, you know, there was that debate around who's the best team ever and who's the best Premier League team and stuff. Well, City, you know, City are winning it at the minute, boys. And I think that this team were the golden boys, weren't they, for a couple of years? They were the team that sort of everyone eulogised over and, you know, loved to talk up, and suddenly they're not anymore, and it's up to them to sort of prove that, you know, they're still up and about, they're still up there, and they can give us all our deliver all our dreams while we're in the stadium. Because I think that's another thing, you didn't get your champions and your you know, your big parade last year. Well, you'll get it at the end of this year if you do it right.
Let's all hope so. Okay, we're going to have a little bit of a break now. Well, in terms of the room, we've got lots of exciting things coming up for you to listen to. Two of my favourite subjects, raving and public health, are both coming up now. And so you get to hear about what's been going on in Liverpool over the last week or so and how magnificent it's been for the city. And then we'll be back getting ourselves up for Southampton at home. And this weekend, on the weekend, we wanted to reflect on what was a brilliant weekend for Liverpool last year, and pictures that were beamed all around the world of Liverpool having a fantastic time and a fantastically well-organised time. And to talk about that aspect of it, and then also the fun aspect, of course, I've got Claire McColgan, who's the Director of Culture Liverpool. Claire, welcome back to the Anfield Wrap.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I saw lots of beaming smiles over the weekend, but I think yours was my favourite. I saw you did lots of interviews, but, you know, you seemed thrilled with how it had gone. I know it was a huge amount of work, and we'll come on to that. And what you guys managed to achieve in such a short amount of time is nothing short of miraculous, to be honest with you. But to start with the fun part, you must have been so nice to see so many people enjoy themselves safely at the weekend.
Oh, it was great. It was just great to see. And I think, especially because it was such a young people kind of filled event, you forget what they've gone through for the last year and a half, really. And I think for me, just seeing them all absolutely, you know, having fun, but doing it in a really safe way, but just bringing that kind of part of our massive industry back. I mean, events, I mean, look at football, you know, events are the lifeblood of this city. And we've never properly tried to get them back up and running under a COVID situation. So this was the first, and people just went into it with massive open hearts. So thanks to everyone, you know, who attended, really.
Yeah, there was that attitude, wasn't it, that seemed to sort of shine out to me. You know, it was an attitude of gratitude, I think, for the events happening, but also, you know, people determined to sort of make the most of it and to follow procedures that were there, because they realised that they were there to make everyone, you know, safe, but also to give everyone a chance to enjoy themselves as much as they could.
Yeah, and you know, we're in a COVID situation. COVID's not gone away. So what we need to do with these events is try to work out how we can get people back doing the things they love safely. So all the kind of science stuff that's going to happen now between the events happening and, you know, it feeding into government, we'll look at how we've opened schools safely. You know, it's kind of how you work under a COVID cloud, really, just to get stuff up and running. And I think that's what's going to be really interesting is, you know, can we open events safely as a country? I really, really hope so, because what we felt here in this city this weekend was a tiny little moment of happiness, wasn't it, in a world of that's just had none of that for the last year and a half.
Yeah, it must have been, some feeling at the end of Sunday when it was all obviously gone so well. I mean, you must have been exhausted, first of all, because quite how you've managed to do all this in such a short amount of time. But I mean, try and explain those range of emotions you must have had on Sunday night, because it must have been a lot, so much pride, so much kind of everything, really.
Oh, it was. But, you know, we've worked with just brilliant promoters, and, you know, putting on events like that in this city, like, you know, you get people like Circus and Festival Public, they do it all the time, you know, they're really good at it. But the stuff that's gone on behind the scenes with the testing, with the science, looking at what we need to check for afterwards, all of that work is at a whole other level. And I think what's really interesting is how events will change post this, because, you know, I said, always say to Matt Ashton, who's our director of public health, normally just be arguing about alcohol sponsorship at events. That's what we've been doing in a previous world. But now kind of the health part is so important. That's going to be a real difference, I think, in the way that we do events in the future. But look, it's been brilliant for Liverpool, and let's just hope that the evidence that we gather from that, like it did in Barcelona, you know, allows events to open safely in the whole country.
So what is the
next back?
Yeah, well, that'd be lovely. Well, last game of the season, there's going to be 10,000 in, apparently, so we shall see. I mean, what are the next sort of stages then for Liverpool? So if people are seeing the scenes at the weekend and maybe couldn't get there, or were a bit unsure about it, but are now thinking, well, I'll have some of that sort of... Are we a step closer, I guess?
Well, we're a step closer in kind of getting the evidence, because that's what the point of it is, because they're not... Although they were events, but the evidence is the most important. So what government will do now is look at that evidence to say, can we get 10,000 people back in a stadium safely? Is it the right thing to do at this point in time? Let's hope so. How do we mitigate if we have, you know, positive COVID tests? What is the kind of outbreak plan to deal with that, so that we can get events opening under COVID, because COVID's not going anywhere. It doesn't feel like that to me anyway. So we need to make sure we can get the things that we love back, but within that kind of situation. And I think that's what will be really interesting. So I'm really hoping that 21st of June, you know, it all of the things that we love will come back. But the evidence that we've created in Liverpool will help inform that.
Yeah, and it's great to see Liverpool leading on that.
Absolutely. Like Barcelona and Amsterdam. Barcelona did similar events, and so did Amsterdam. So it's great that we're in those, you know, up with those great cities.
Yeah, in good company. I would argue. And I mean, part of your role is, you know, to promote Liverpool around the world, and that's what happened at the weekend. You know, I had people messaging me all over the world. A friend of mine who lives out in Brazil was texting me saying, it was great to see, you know, Liverpool on the news out there and things like that. And it really showcased Liverpool at the weekend, didn't it? And as a fun, vibrant, kind of exciting place.
Oh, it was just hearing those Scouse voices all over every time you turned on the radio and every time you turned on the television. And it's just that Liverpool thing came across, that absolute, you know, joy of life came across. And, you know, I didn't need to promote Liverpool this weekend. Liverpool did it for itself. Liverpool was the absolute star of the show this weekend. And that's what was just really kind of, that makes you just go, wow, this city, you know. It's got such a big international reach anyway, but then when you add that passion and that stuff that you got over the weekend, it was just incredible.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, thanks so much for all of you, for all the work you did. And I know so many people enjoyed themselves. It was great for me to sort of watch it from afar. I didn't attend anything, but I know lots of our guys did, and I had such a good time, especially Circus on Saturday night. And so congratulations, I guess, and thank you. And onwards and upwards, I guess.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Number on a fantastic weekend in Liverpool, and one of the most iconic images that went all around the world was Lavender Song DJing Overcome with Emotion, I would say. And so to talk about that, I have got Lauren on. So Lauren over Zoom, thanks very much for coming and joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. You know, I've been a big fan of you guys and what you do, and you know, the supporters club. So it's a pleasure to be on. Great. As a fellow Liverpool fan.
Well, it's right, and as a fellow Scouser, you must have just been so made up, first of all, that the event was going on, and then obviously to be asked to play and just to be involved in the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I got the message to say, like, would you be interested? I was like, you know, what else am I doing for a start? Like, absolutely FO. And I was absolutely over the moon. But yeah, from the minute I got asked to do it, like, I knew it was going to be such a big thing, like, such a big deal. Like, you know, Liverpool are very lucky to be hosting the show for a start. The fact that Circus were able to do it is brilliant. And, you know, they really nailed everything. I don't think I've heard like one complaint about the whole thing. It was just ran so professionally. Yusuf, Rich and everyone just did like a tremendous job. All the DJs were brilliant. Obviously, like when I played, I was like one of the first ones to play. Yusuf was already on as I arrived, but I think obviously he was like opening up, and it, you know, it took a little bit of time to like build up. So I kind of got a tune ready to play first, like quite an emotional, like euphoric 90s intro kind of song. And I'd been listening to it for weeks thinking, yeah, this is the one, this is what I want to play. And I knew that I was going to get emotional at some point. Like I said to Sean, my partner, I said to all my family, I was like, I'm probably going to be in bits as soon as I play like the first breakdown and build up. And then when that first drop comes in, I was like, you best get the tissues ready because I think I'm going to be a mess. Because literally when I've been like sat in the studio, like getting me playlist together and getting tunes ready and looking for music, I've literally been welling up. Like, yeah. I'm not really like an overly emotional person, like, but I think, you know, the difficult year that we, like all of us have had, and especially in this industry and in a lot of creative industries, like we've really struggled. It's been so up and down, and you know, we've all just been dying to do what we love. And it's not even, you know, obviously we've been missing out on the money and stuff, but it's not even about the money. It's just purely like, this is what I feel like I've been made to do, and this is just my love and passion. And you know, without DJing every week and doing what I love, it's kind of left a bit of like emptiness inside me. So obviously when I got to play this first track, I'm sure you've seen the video, but I just completely felt a bit like, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I think when, you know, the crowd like kind of reciprocated that, and they you know, they were cheering and everything. And obviously I'm from Liverpool, and like I think most of the people knew I was from Liverpool who were there, and like, you know, obviously like the majority of them were Scousers apart from students, and I could just really feel the energy in the room. Like it was just, it was really, really overwhelming. Like I started to cry, and then I remember I turned around and I was like, has anyone got any tissues? Like I was like, please give me some tissues. And I was like using my t-shirt, and I was like trying to cover my face because I knew there was like cameras everywhere, and I was like, I don't want a picture of me like with like mascara dripping down my face. So I'm like hiding under the decks, and then Sean like looks at me, and she's like, she comes over and gives me a hug, and she's a mess. So then that sets me off even more. Because it's like, you know, like when you're already upset and someone says either, are you okay? Or when people give you a hug and you fall to bits. That was me. Like, I just felt a bit. So yeah, it was just so, so emotional. And like, when I turn around and look at all the guys who work for Circus and stuff, and even like the photographers and that, like I could see that they were emotional. And, you know, one of the guys, Rich McGuinness, who's, you know, one of the lead promoters of Circus, and, you know, he does quite a lot for the events industry. He came over to me and gave me a hug like during my set and was like, oh, you've smashed it, you know, like, well done. And I was like, Rich, I've just been an emotional wreck. I've just been crying my eyes out. And he was like, so have I. He was like pointing at his face. And I think it was just like, I don't know, it was crazy. I think because it was like the first night as well, and I was one of the earlier DJs, because I'm a Scouser, I just felt it even more. Do you know what I mean? It was just like a build-up of everything. It was just really, really overwhelming. And I think the fact that I was really tired as well from getting up at 6:30 to do like interviews at the BBC definitely didn't help me. So I was just an absolute mess. I didn't stand a chance, to be honest.
Well, it was fantastic. I couldn't get there, unfortunately, but just watching the videos, and you know, I was buzzing off, you know, just the little clips that sort of I was seeing and everything. And there just seemed to be so much kind of love in the room, really. And that's what I got from it, that people were just so sort of thankful to sort of be there. Definitely. So thankful to Circus for pulling it off. And, you know, I don't think there was much left on the dance floor, was there? Everyone gave it everything they had.
Oh, definitely. It was like a huge sense of relief for everyone, for the DJ, for the promoters, for the event organisers, even the sound techs, probably they're thinking, fucking hell, I'm so just happy to be back doing what I love and doing my job. And yeah, like all the crowd, like I think the news outlets were like trying to like ask the crowds, you know, questions like, oh, are you anxious? Are you nervous? And, you know, I think a lot of them have like this agenda and they just kind of want a headline of like, you know, this, they were nervous, like everyone was terrified. But I think it was so positive. Like all the messages was like so positive. And like, you know, even afterwards when I think Sky News like posted like something about me like getting upset and everything, and you know, people were messaging me from all over the world, and still now like my phone has been blowing up, like just saying, Lauren, like thank you so much, like don't realize what you've done for the industry in just showing your emotion and everything. And like I've just really felt the love, like it's just been the craziest thing, and you know, I'm so proud to be from this city as well.
But that's it. It has given a lot of people around the world hope, and I've noticed that, and I've seen a lot of, you know, your videos shared in you know, every place you can imagine, but people say this is us soon, and that seems to be what it was saying, you know, guys in Miami, guys in, you know, wherever you want to say, just going like, you know, this will be us soon type thing, and that's what it's kind of given everyone, hasn't it? It's not just a weekend, it's we are on our way back, and the good times are coming.
Yeah, exactly. I think everyone knew with such silence for so long that when we come back there's going to be a lot of noise. And you know, I've got friends who are living in Australia, DJs over there, and, you know, they've all been saying to me, the local scene in Australia is absolutely booming and it's the best it's ever been. And I just know, like, when we fully go back, I literally think it's going to be, like, crazy. It's going to be, like, the 90s all over again. It's going to be madness, and I can't wait. And I'm really excited for everyone, really, in the industry, because I do feel like the end is near, and I do truly believe that by June we will be going back to normal. Hopefully.
So is the best thing about playing at 3 o'clock then you can be like, right, I'm off. You're in charge, just getting stuck in, just loving it.
Yeah, oh exactly. Yeah. And but to be honest, like straight after, like people were like, oh, can I interview you? And I was like, I was thinking, you've got half an hour and then I just want to get pissed. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just want to be in the crowd as well, which it was. I was like right at the front and the left all day, and just, I had an absolute ball. Yeah, we both did. Like, we were both exhausted. I had to go to Sean and I, she travelled with me. I had to play in London the next day for a day and a night set. I had to get the train to London at like 10 o'clock. I was up at like 8:30. And as you can imagine, we were drinking all day. I got home on Friday night and I realised that I'd left my USB with all my music at Circa. So I was like, oh, you're joking me. So I was literally up pissed on Friday night, like trying to drag all my tunes over onto this USB, like falling asleep in my chair. It was a whirlwind weekend, and I feel like I'm just getting over it now, to be honest.
No, absolutely. No, it looked fantastic. It sounds fantastic as well. And what about there for Liverpool as well? You've mentioned all the interviews that you've done. I know Youssef kindly did us last week amongst a million other things, the sort of he was doing, and I'm sure it's been the same for everyone. And I think, you know, I've loved seeing, you know, international artists like Blessed Badaro speak so highly of Liverpool and the kind of the party we threw and the positivity. And I just think, you know, the city's really won over the weekend. Obviously, the people in the city have really won, you know, who got to enjoy it. And you've got to give a shout out to what, you know, the stuff at Sefton Park and Blossoms and what they did as well. But so the people really won, but I think the whole city has, in terms of what we've sort of projected around the world, in my opinion.
100%, yeah, definitely. I feel like, you know, Liverpool is known for its culture and its music and everything, and the fact that we were given this opportunity, and Circus were given this opportunity, and they've absolutely smashed it out the park. I think, you know, it resonates throughout the whole of the UK and even the world, and, you know, I think it definitely puts us on the map even more, and, you know, it's just, I think everyone who was there the weekend felt so lucky to be from Liverpool or living in Liverpool. So, you know, and, you know, even when I travelled to London, everyone was like, I was like, fucking hell, why didn't they do that in London? I was like, don't know. I was like, because Liverpool's the best. And they were like, how are you a Scouser? I was like, yeah. But yeah, I was just winding them all up. But I was like, yeah, because you got to be a Scouser, you know, and all that. But yeah, it was funny.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, you passed the audition for the Ampere Map End of Season party, so that's the main thing, you know, you're
right
for.
It's right.
I'm trying to get camel fat, but the dirty blues, aren't they? So,
yes, I'll get them on. No, God, we have murder on Twitter over Liverpool.
It's right, Laura. Nice to meet you properly and well in
nice
again.
Nice to meet you. Nice on me. Take care.
And we're now joined by Matt Ashton for Public Health in Liverpool to talk to us about the weekend from his perspective. So we've had the fun stuff. We've had the international DJs, Matt. We've had Claire gushing about Liverpool positivity all around the world. And now we're going to go for hard science, if you don't mind. And I'm really interested in sort of, first of all, what you observed over the weekend, really, because I know you went to a lot of the events. You were tweeting that you felt very old. but yeah, I know you attended a lot of them. So I guess what did you see, and how sort of interesting was it for you to see these events kind of in a different world, if you like?
Well, fundamentally, it was just nice to see people out and about again, mixing and having a nice time. And I think that's something, you know, we've all missed, haven't we, over the last 12, 18 months. So it was nice to see the return to something that looked a little bit more normal and perhaps gave us a glimpse into what the future might hold for big events.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it was great to sort of, you know, to see those, you know, images for me, sort of observing it sort of online, couldn't get down to anything sort of, unfortunately, but yeah, cancelled it for football. That was a laugh, wasn't it? But sort of great to see them. And you know, this was a test event, and this was a health test. And so, you know, in terms of, you know, getting the information out there, what you wanted people to do before, first of all, so how successful did you feel that was?
Well, so these are really important events. I think that's the first thing to say. You know, this is all about understanding what the risks are from big events and finding ways to kind of mitigate those risks. So what do we need to do better? What do we need to do different? So the overall test events, both the ones held in Liverpool and also across the whole of the country, will be looking at things like virus transmission, looking at people movements, looking at airflow and ventilation, how people get to and from the gigs, but also helping the promoters understand what work is required to put on a different kind of event in the future. So there's loads of learning out of that that I think we'll get rapidly, but also over the next couple of months. I think that the thing for me was, it was just very complicated. It was hard work. It wasn't an easy thing to do. And as you've said, the messaging around this stuff is critical. You know, we've had a few criticisms online about, you know, why are you doing this? This is a waste of time. Or why are you doing this? You're going to spread disease around the city, you know, all that kind of stuff. So the comms were complicated, trying to explain that actually where we are right now in the city is good. We've got a low level of infection. Risk is low because we were working really hard and really well with the organisers, and obviously with ticket holders, so people know what they need to do before and after the event. So it hard work, but ultimately, hopefully, rewarding in terms of what the future might bring for us.
So what happens now, Matt, in terms of your work? Obviously, I know you encourage people to get tested 5 days after. So if you did go to events and you're hearing this sort of Thursday night, Friday morning, there is still time if you went to stuff on the Sunday to do that. But in terms of, you know, your work, what happens now?
Yeah, so it's exactly that. So everybody who went to an event couldn't get in without a negative lateral flow test, and that activated their tickets. And then everybody after the event, 5 days after the event, is asked to complete a PCR test. So if you went to the Sefton Park event, for example, on the Sunday, then that would have been Friday, and ask people to complete it on Friday. But if you haven't done it, then obviously it's still important that those PCR tests get completed. And that assesses whether and how much virus was transmitted. You know, I'm not expecting loads. I think what we saw in Barcelona, when Barcelona did a test event of around 5,000 people, they saw about 5 or 6 positive cases at the end of it, and also not necessarily cases that had been transmitted at the event, but people have come into the event without it necessarily being picked up by other tests. So I don't think we'll see zero, but I think we'll see a handful of people. But then what we've got to do is we've got to look at all of that data, understand, I guess, our processes as well. You know, how well did that ticketing system work? Are there things that need to be improved? How well did the information systems work? And do people really understand what we were trying to do here? And I think, you know, there is still a point, isn't there, that we're not quite back to normal yet. So it isn't now kind of everybody carry on doing what they did over the weekend. It's still follow the rules. But the information, the intelligence, the data we collected will help shape what that future will look like.
In terms of Liverpool itself, then, it seems to me that everyone's worked together so well, and we had Claire on before and she was laughing saying, oh, and me and Matt are normally talking about alcohol sponsorship, and now it's gone to sort of much, much bigger things, you know, they're just two groups, you know, Culture Liverpool and yourself on public health in Liverpool, and you know, there's so many people involved in putting something like The Weeknd on, and will be sort of moving forward, and it feels like to me everyone's working together so well to sort of do these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I could not be prouder of my city and the way that people have worked together across the whole city. Everybody, and that's, you know, that's just our citizens, our residents, you know, the who have got behind what we've been trying to do around the pandemic in terms of, you know, protecting people and protecting the city. And, you know, it's been awful. Let's be really honest. The last year, the last 18 months have been awful for so many people who've experienced personal loss, but also, you know, impact on their mental health and just the loss of experiences that people, particularly younger people, would have been doing over the last year. So it's been really hard. But the wonderful thing has been seeing how everybody's kind of come together to try and get through it together. And I think that's one of the things that Liverpool does really well.
Yeah. And I guess moving forward as well, it's funny for me because I've been looking at a lot of stuff online and some people are still a bit scared when they see these big events and other people, you know, are shouting them down. And I don't really like either position, you know, to be honest with you. I think fear is a negative thing, but also, you know, we can't be reckless as well. And I guess it's how do we get that balance between wanting to come out and wanting to enjoy ourselves and wanting to get back to normal, in inverted commas, but also, you know, having a healthy respect, if that's the word, for, you know, what is out there and the fact that it hasn't gone away.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And it is absolutely about getting that balance right. And, you know, one of the things is, if you've got low infection rates in the city, as we have, it's a really good time to test out these things, to capture that learning, to understand what works best. And it's much better to take that approach, that kind of cautious, science-led approach, to going straight into, I don't know, having 50,000 people at Anfield or having 90,000 people at Creamfields without understanding what the impact of those things are. So this isn't doing nothing. It's taking a science-led approach to understanding the risk, and then we can work together to put measures in place to prevent those risks. Because the last thing any of us want is a big increase in infections, a big spike, and then another lockdown or further restrictions. You know, nobody wants that. So whatever we can do proactively to stop that happening, the better.
Absolutely. And just while we've got you on, Matt, you know, it's been announced last couple of days by Liverpool Football Club that there'll be 10,000 fans in the last home game of the season. That's going to be throughout the Premier League. And I know that the last two games, they're doing it now to give everyone a chance. What conversations are you having with Liverpool? You know, they'll have their own announcements about sort of what they're going to do. I know it'll be fairly similar to what they did in December in terms of, you know, electronic ticketing and mobile ticketing and things like that. But what conversations are you sort of having with Liverpool? And you know, is this all sort of part of, I guess, gathering information in terms of moving forward as well?
Yeah, I mean, the last games of the season aren't part of the events research programme, but they're absolutely a continuation of the good work we've done in the city right the way through the pandemic. And as you rightly said, you know, we had games last year, one of the few parts of the country where we had supporters back in, and both clubs who I've been working with throughout will have learnt loads around how you get fans in and out safely. This is a bigger number of supporters than the 1,500, 2,000 we had in before Christmas, but nonetheless, it's not a standing start for them. And, you know, having worked with both clubs over the last year, they know exactly what they're doing to keep their fans safe, to keep people safe, which is great. Key again will be how you get 10,000 people in the stadium safely, spread out and not mixing too much, how you get people in and out safely, and encouraging everybody to have those lateral flow tests before they go, just to minimize risk. And of course, you know, this isn't just about individual risk, is it? It's about keeping everybody inside the stadium and outside the stadium safe. And I know that our fans will respond brilliantly in the way they always have done.
Yeah, let's all hope so. Thanks a lot to Matt for coming on. I would recommend following Matt on Twitter if you want to be kept up to date with Liverpool in particular, but also generally. And he's at DPH_Ashton. We'll tag him in our tweets as well for the show. I'm getting ahead of myself there. But he is obviously, as I said before, the Director of Public Health here in Liverpool. So Matt, thanks very much for coming on again.
Cheers. Thank you.
Welcome along to a brand new podcast called 21st Century Football, a complete guide. Well, so far that is. This podcast is all about celebrating the best of the world's most beautiful game, but only if it happened in the 21st century.
I'm excited for Steven Gerrard, the greatest player there ever was, who I've had on my back, I should point out. Just the shirt. He was on my shirt. He didn't ride me.
Well, yeah.
Although, if he offered...
This series is all about championing the greatest footballers of the last 20 years. Each week, we'll have a variety of hosts, including YouTube star Statman Dave, Stephen Tries, and myself, Will Brazier. Will also feature radio legend Adam Brown. Find us on your regular podcasting sites. Search 21st Century Football.
It sound right, boy.
Hope you enjoyed all that. It was really interesting to get varying degrees of different feedback from, as I say, what was quite a monumental weekend in Liverpool, and we felt lucky to have it. Just to touch on that, Sean, you went Friday to Circus, did a little video that went viral, did well. I know you were emotional on the day and emotional on the night and quite emotional the next morning for different reasons, but it was great. You had a great time. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, it was amazing. I didn't really think much of it in the build-up, to be honest. Like, we were obviously excited for it, and like Lauren was doing loads of media around it. And we got in and we saw this lad Jay that we know from Circus and hugged him. My eyes were going. I thought, oh, here we go. This is going to be heavy. And I was thinking, it's just literally a club night, like just a bit of two-step and fist pumping, like, you know, all stuff we've done before. And then we got in, like saw Youssef and that, and Lauren starts playing. And I don't know, I think it was just a few factors that built up to it. I think, you know, just looking at Lauren, who's not worked for like 14 months, like not doing the only job you know how to do and love, is tough watching someone go through that. But then you've got the fact that the whole country, if not the whole world, was watching, because this was literally the only event that could have happened, at least in this country. You know, there's been some other pilots. And then I think the fact that it was in Liverpool, it was just like, it was just boss. Like the fact that the spotlight was on Liverpool for all the right reasons. It was Lauren's first gig back and a hometown gig as well. So as soon as she started playing the first tune, I could see her going, and I thought, oh my God, like, I'm going to go with her. So she's looking at me going, I need tissues. And I'm like crying. And then I turn around going, has anyone got tissues? And, like, everyone else on the stage is crying. It was just like, it's mad, isn't it? It's just all of that kind of build up of missing it. But then I think the whole day, the atmosphere was just electric. I think, you know, a lot of the journalists we were speaking to were saying, you know, is it going to be, you're nervous? Is everyone going to be kind of keeping themselves to themselves? I was like, you do not know how Liverpool parties. Like, we've been told we're allowed to do this. We've all had tests. Like, we're going in. And I think you could just tell that in the atmosphere. Like, I had a few people messaging me saying, you know, what's the vibe like in there? Is it any different? And I was like, it's actually better, because like no one, you know, like usually everyone, like, you know, waits a few hours, warms up a bit, it gets dark, and then it picks up. But like literally from the first tune, everyone was just stuck straight into it. And then the reaction afterwards is just mad. So yeah, I put up a few videos of Lauren, but I think because she was on early and everyone was dying to see what it was like, it went viral. It was mad. I spent the whole time refreshing my likes rather than actually having a dance. I was like, this is going off, you know. I had like Sky messaging me wanting to use it, NBC in America, like there was media from Australia, China, everywhere, New York Times, and it was just, I was just so proud and made up that it was in Liverpool. So yeah, big moment for the city.
I mean, we weren't even there. We were buzzing off at all. And then you obviously knew you were going the next day as well. So that must have been good.
Yeah, it was then interesting to sort of realise that the eyes of the whole world were on Liverpool for this. Mm. And that was something that I hadn't thought about in the build-up. And it was only when I saw Sian's video, there were quite a few going up throughout the day, that I just realised sort of how widespread that this is, and why there was so much interest in it, in that, you know, that, you know, I was lucky enough to be there on the Saturday, and I suppose I got to feel the feel that so many people have waited for and hoped for over the past, at some stage over the past 14 months, which is just like total normality for a little bit. It was almost like an oasis amongst you know, just this world of rules that we have at the moment. And yeah, it was unreal, to be honest. I was a little bit emotional whenever we got there. I went with Josh, and whenever we got in, Josh would say, oh, I need food whenever I get in. And like, I was like, should we just see what's in, like, see what's inside? Like, get a little drink.
See what's behind the magic.
As soon as I get him in, he was in. And even just sort of hearing loud music, hearing the bass, hearing like the drops, like seeing how made up the DJs were, and the crowd as well. Like, no one pretending to be trying to be cool. You know, it was just like everyone just like having the best time of their lives. And I think as well, like, just you know, what Shan said there, I saw something that Circus had put up and about how, you know, they've been able to employ these people to put this day on, for everything from the DJs to, you know, the people that make the logistics of it all happen, the people that were on site working the day and so on. Like, the fact that they were back in employment again and doing the thing that they've done before all of this. And I think that was like something that hit me more than I thought, because my sister works in the music industry and in sort of events and festivals, and she's just been out of work the whole time. And suddenly I was thinking, well, if this goes well, like, fingers crossed, you know, that things start to open up, and then this gives all of these people are back in their jobs again. And there's just, I was going into it thinking, fuck, happy days, I'm going to a rave again. And I come out of it thinking, hopefully this is like the beginning of the end of it all, and hopefully this is a little bit of scientific evidence that they've got now to say that X worked and X didn't work, but we can do that better next time. So like I've sent away my test today that we had to take 5 days after the event, and they look at that to see, obviously we had a negative test before we went in, so they sort of compare to see how many people have got COVID off the back of it, but hopefully it's positive. But yeah, I mean, seeing your favorite DJs again in the flesh, and Camel Fat coming out as a special guest, and just being able to hug mates again, like,
so many hugs.
Oh yeah,
I was just literally hugging anyone. Yeah. The cleaner, call me, are you?
One of the underrated things about raves, talking to people in the smoking area that you don't know and will never see again, but you were getting to do that again, and not be distanced, and know that you weren't breaking any rules, and just feeling like, you know, a mix of excitement, euphoria, and normality.
Good words. Okay. In terms of normality, let's talk about Southampton. Southampton at home, and I mean, they should be fresh. They've not played for ages. They got on a bus to Manchester, and that was about it. So, you know, looking at the team, you know, he's got everyone we expect. Nat Phillips was picked against Manchester United, so should be fine, which will allow a bit of Fabinho into midfield if you want. So, who would you be looking to pick, and who would you be looking for sort of big games from?
I think the 11 kind of picks itself at the minute, with the only real question would be around Firmino or maybe Diogo Jota or even Sadio Mane. But given the break and the well-rested, I would go with the front three and leave Jota on the bench. I do have a minor worry. You mentioned the break there. I do have a minor worry because we tend to struggle. It might just be a thing in my head. But
no, we do, yeah.
After we had the break, which is mad considering how much Jürgen bangs on about time to train on the pitch.
I think he wants 5 days between games, ideally.
And but no, and Southampton, the only saving grace, and this is Southampton's form isn't great. I think they're 15th in the current form table. I think they've only won one of the last five.
That's
and
right,
lost
yeah.
three. And then, you know, I think this is very much the last chance to learn for Liverpool as well. To try and get the win. I think if we're looking for, and keep silver linings again, I think the one advantage we can take from the United game being postponed is that the City Chelsea game at the weekend is now not a dead rubber. So I think City will have to turn up, because if City win, you know,
well, it's a warm up for the Champions League final as well, isn't it? So they want to put a mark on each other there. But no, that's a good point. Actually, it does make that a bigger game.
So you know, hopefully City won't get the deck chairs out. And the other side of it, as we mentioned, that you mentioned earlier in the show, quite rightly, we should have a slight time advantage on Manchester United as well. So who knows? Going into Southampton, but none of this matters unless we beat Southampton. We've just got to get them out the way. And I think we were saying before, Southampton, Liverpool have tended to have lost this season when there are loads of reasons to win. And that worries me. I think it was Southampton that really set off our poll run. I mean, I don't know the results in chronological order, but that's the
it
one.
It felt like it did, yeah.
It sticks out. And then, like every other team that's beaten us this year, after they get a result against us, they go to shit. But Southampton are missing a couple up front, I think. I think Danny Ings is out. I don't think Minamino can play because he's on loan.
That's right.
Is that right? Yeah. So I think that leaves them limited. My only fear is that Alex McCarthy does what he always does and has an absolute fucking worldie against us. So, yeah, everything to play for, though, John.
It is everything to play for. They need to win every game, Sean, and that starts on Saturday night. And sometimes a clear objective is a good one to have. They certainly know what it is. You know, even if they win every game, they might not get there, but that certainly feels like what they need to do with any hopes to get top four.
Yeah, it does. It's a massive game, and I think I'd be interested to see what the team selection is, because they put the teams out on the Man United game, didn't they? And obviously the game didn't happen. But obviously with everything that happened, that wasn't really reported on. But I think Jota didn't start, or wasn't on the sheet for that. And Wijnaldum, I think he he had on the bench with Milner starting. So whether he goes for that exact same team again, we'll see. I'm sure he probably doesn't want to be too predictable in that sense. But yeah, for the front three, Salah and Jota are the first two names on that sheet for me every time. And I think, I don't know if there's an element of Klopp really trying to play the usual front three into form a bit, because he does. But then I also think he likes the option that you can rotate them all now and they can all play in, you know, any part of that front three. You know, for years it was always just the kind of front three, no one could really get into that. So yeah, I'm thinking I'd like to see Milner definitely start. I think we've gone from having like captains from front to back in the pitch, haven't we, to just having none really this season. I think that's one thing that's really shown. But I think the games that Milner's been playing, he's really put in those, you know, captain performances and felt like he's just drove the intensity really of the game. They're without a few players as well, aren't they? I think Danny Ings is injured,
yeah.
Which might play to our advantage. But the Newcastle game, it's weird. Like, I'm over that result now, but I actually enjoyed the game because we created that many chances. The 4-2-3-1 was, you know, did its job to an extent, but it's whether, yeah, does he try and surprise them and go something similar where we just kind of go all out with the... with the attack. I don't know. The only thing that worried me about the Newcastle game is that they were just getting through our midfield like a knife through butter. It was a bit worrying. But, you know, the chances we created, that was one of the games I've enjoyed the most in terms of attacking point of view. You know, after watching so many of these dead rubber games where it's just like, you know, creating absolutely nothing. So, yeah, I don't know. I think he's probably going to want to have an element of surprise with Southampton to an extent. And I think, yeah, as you say, the rested... fresh legs, another week on the training pitch to work on different tactics. So massive game. I think we literally can't have anything other than 3 points, is it? Like we were one game away from being fourth, and now we've slipped into seventh. We've now got this game postponed, not happening for a while. So like we could slip even further. Like we just have to win this game.
So you might go for, because as Sean says, Craig, it worked to an extent, and so if they just kicked the ball in the goal this time. Up to Reds.
It worked to the extent of the important bit not happening. this is the first time I'm going to watch the game and not think of the wider context of where Liverpool are in the league and how other teams do and so on. I'm just going to watch the football match this time because, you know, I think too often over the past few weeks I've been like worrying about, you know, well, if this happens then this happens, and actually most of the time I haven't been able to rely on Liverpool to do the thing that they need to do. So I mean I'd love Fabinho in midfield again, and I think I would go front three. You know, I think I'd go Fabinho in midfield, Thiago, and then, you know, maybe a Milner, maybe I think he might do something a bit wild, actually. Maybe a Keita or a Curtis Jones, who we haven't seen in quite a while. Someone that we know can open up a tight, packed Southampton defence. I mean, Southampton have been really poor. I was quite surprised to see how far down the table they were, in that they're 1 point ahead of Newcastle. Now, I know Newcastle sort of did the business against us in the previous game, but I just feel like... my only worry is that they've had this 2 week break, and quite often in the past, even when this Liverpool side have been good, after a 2 week break, they've been a bit slow out of the block, and it's taken them a little bit of time. And if they can just get a win in this game, I actually think the United game, getting moved to when it is, could play into our advantage. Then that, you know, we've got games quickly packed together right towards the end of the season that they can. If they can find some sort of rhythm from this game, that at least there's something to build on with each game. And, you know, who knows, obviously, that as you said there earlier about the Chelsea City game, suddenly you're looking at it and you're not too far behind, and then you're looking at games again in the context of what everything else happened. But for now, just get 3 points, Liverpool.
Think they will?
I do think they will. I think it'll be. I don't think it'll be this like glitzy performance. I don't think we'll see as many chances as we did in the past game.
It's Saturday night.
I know.
That's Saturday, you are Fat Boy Slim.
I know, John. Don't remind me. And this Saturday, I'm going to be watching the Reds toil. I think it'll be a difficult game. I do think they'll get it. I think they just need to get it by hook or by crook. They need to get 3 points, but I think it'll be made difficult for us, and we'll make it difficult for ourselves. But I'm going to go 1-0 Liverpool.
Do you give me a toil, or do you give me a two-step and fist pump Saturday night?
1-0 would be painful, wouldn't it? I'd be biting my nails all the way to the end. I think because they're without a few options, especially going forward. I'm going to say 2-0 to the Reds.
Andy.
Right here, right now.
Yeah, there we are. Fan voice. See, me and Andy know the 90s as well.
Comfortable 3-1 to the Reds.
I'll tell you what, that'll be nice. I hope you enjoy it. Anyway, hope you enjoy your Saturday night. Loads to come over the weekend from the on-field app and our subscription service. So the team talk will be out tomorrow. That'll be straight after the press conference, which Josh is hosting. There'll be a little Southampton insight as well. And on the video as well, we'll be doing a really nice preview outside somewhere, if this hail stops, by the way, tomorrow as well. And then obviously on the day of the game, loads of stuff across social media. And then straight after the game, post-match show, post-match pints on audio and video. So great time to subscribe to the Anfield app, but enjoy yourself, enjoy your weekend. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.